favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
I think we're good. Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and I am joined, as always, by the wonderful Mr. Anthony Fuentes. Hello.
Yo.
And we promised, due to popular demand, welcome back my betrothed, DJ Spears.
Hey.
Thanks. Glad y'all like me.
Due to some demand, yes.
No, I'll
just leave now.
No, it's actually per popular request. We did plan this, but we got a really good feedback on Tales from the Hood.
We did, yeah, we got good fucking feedback. Actually.
So, and everyone said they loved you. So,
yeah, I had a couple.
It's nice knowing that someone loves me.
No, I had a couple people tell me that Tales from the Hood was their favorite one so far.
Yes.
So there you go.
And then I've gotten one for Get Out as the favorite
yes,
so far.
And that was Caitlin. She doesn't count. Sorry, Caitlin.
No, Caitlin counts. We love Caitlin. Hi,
well,
Caitlin.
We love Caitlin.
Also with Tales from the Hood, though, everybody told me that me and you sound, like, whiter than shit. Even though I'm not.
Right. That's so funny. I totally can
Look
see that.
Look at me diversifying.
There you go.
Well,
again,
no, like...
the gradient's happening.
Right. We talk a lot about, like, our experiences, you know, in interacting with different race structures as our respective races.
They just said we sounded white. like the voice.
Well, I'm white.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm like looking all into it. I'm like, well, this is what, you know,
yeah,
da-da-da-da-da.
You know, broadly, and I'm like, no, maybe just the vernacular.
I think just
the
tone. Yeah, all right.
I need you to like pull out your machismo.
You know, right? Pull up my essay. Orale, podcast.
Even that sounds like a white person.
No, but I was raised with it.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, yes.
Let's get started. As we round out February, which I also learned like halfway through the month that February is also Women in Horror Month, as well as Black History Month, which just adds a lot of
next year.
Well, not even that. I'm just like, I am happy keeping February as Black Horror Month for us.
Yeah.
Because I'm me. I celebrate women in horror all year round. I mean, also black horror, but you know, I'm not black.
And there are no good Valentine's Day horror movies. I would even say the Valentine's Day Massacre or whatever it was.
No, you've never seen My Bloody Valentine?
Yeah, I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
That's insulting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't. Anyways, no, I was just saying My Bloody Valentine is terrible. I don't like it.
You know, I think you're terrible and I don't like you.
Yeah, well, fucking... It's my podcast. I'm going to be on here next week. How about that shit?
Well done.
Ooh.
We'll just come out of my apartment.
What was it in the faculty when Elijah Wood is like, showdown?
Two enter, one leaves.
I will just say, if I am forbidden from this podcast, I will call anti-blackness.
Speaking of forbidden, Clive Barker.
Bringing it back.
Okay, cool. We're coming back.
So, speaking...
A lot of that shit.
I know. Speaking of Clive Barker, today we are talking about the 1992 film Candyman. So, like, to continue my previous thought, we are rounding out February strong with a good classic black horror film.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
I like this one a lot, actually. I hadn't seen it in a long time.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it?
No.
Again, more movies that I watched as a very young child.
Yeah, same. No, same, though. I was having flashbacks. Like, little me was like, right, I hate bees.
Well, here's the thing is, like, which is interesting because both of you guys described the movie as terrifying, like, as an actual, genuinely frightening movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a good, scary movie with, like, good, scary elements, but I don't think I felt, like, the, like, palpable fear that you were explaining, probably because I didn't see it as a kid. However, I saw the cover for it. I saw the cover or like the poster for it. I remember seeing it in a Blockbuster as a child, and it scaring the shit out of me.
Oh yeah, it's a scary name too for a fucking movie.
Yeah, for a horror film. Friday the Cannibal Man.
Yeah, but I think also
it's also just a huge fucking eye.
Yeah, well that, and then I think as if you watch it as a child, you're a kid's brain. So urban legends and fairy tales and shit like mm-hmm. that like has a much more powerful effect on you.
True.
Versus as an adult, you're like, well, I know about this shit. But then you're a kid, you're like, I'm not going to say that in the mirror ever.
Okay, so last night, Alex and I were watching the movie. And she asked me, she's like, would you ever say, like, Bloody Mary in the mirror? And I'm like, no. And then they were like, would you say Candyman? And I'm like, no, never. And they're like, even if it's fake? And I'm like, no, I don't want to test it.
Oh, there you go.
Why tempt fate, right?
Exactly. You know who tempted fate? Helen.
Look at what happened to her.
Who's Helen? What happened to Helen?
The main character.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I just know her as Virginia Madsen.
Jesus Christ. All right, anyway. So, we're talking about Candyman. Yay, Candyman. Also, if we sound out of it, or in any way not in the groove of things, it's been about a week and a half since we recorded, because DJ and I were on vacation.
Yeah.
So,
also, it's late.
It's late. Anthony it's late. Wrote out his coffee high on the drive over.
I still have some coffee.
Hang in there.
All right, we got this. All right,
so, the synopsis. The Candyman, a murderous soul with a hook for a hand, is accidentally summoned to reality by a skeptic grad student researching the monster's myth.
Accidentally?
I know. It's pretty... The synopsis definitely threw me off because I was just like, she was intentional. Oh,
Helen fucked up.
Yeah, she did that. So it is directed by Bernard Rose. It's written by Clive Barker, based off The Forbidden by Clive Barker. And Bernard Rose also helped write the film. The budget is estimated at $6 million. And its gross earnings, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
$25 million.
Pretty good.
And some change.
And some change. Well,
and
over.
Some change.
Yeah.
Over some change.
Closer to 26. I rounded down, but I shouldn't have.
That's
my bad.
Pretty good for a change.
That is pretty good, all things considered. This coming. Well, also, I would say this probably has something to do with it in terms of marketing. It came out mid October.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were riding that Halloween high, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. And you know what, though? This is also during the prime oversaturation of the slasher icon era, and it's an original horror film.
It's that's
so
true.
It's
so it's
like,
not a remake.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that sort of like Candyman's impact on slasher culture, I guess, later.
Okay.
But this film is starring Virginia Madsen, Tony Todd,
Ooh.
Xander Berkeley, Casey Lemons, Vanessa Williams, and DeJuan Guy.
That one guy, yes.
And I only went down to Jake because who really, like,
there's no other characters.
Yeah.
No.
Also, right up top, fuck Trevor.
Also, Jake was the best character of this film.
Yeah, the husband.
No,
fuck Trevor.
Trevor's a little bitch. I fucking hate Trevor.
I know. We didn't include Brittany in here.
Oh, that is a fucking, like, what, his white?
Oh, Stacy. Her name's Stacy. It's some white girl name.
Yeah.
She had a foreign accent, right?
No.
No?
Okay. She was just white.
Tripping. Okay.
Yeah. She was just, like, the dumb blonde stereotype to
Way
a T.
Way too young for the professor.
Well, she's, like, an undergrad student, and
he's
like, a professor. Yeah. It was weird.
He looked old as shit, too. Like, he looked like a total, like,
oh yeah, Helen.
Problematic motherfucker, I will say that.
Like, I was just like, Helen, why are you with this fool? Like, you're like young and hot. Like,
I think this whole episode is going to be, Helen, why did you blank?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And I will say right up top, like, my very first reaction to the movie is when Helen is interviewing some first year and she's like telling the story
mm-hmm.
about Candyman. And the whole time I was listening to her, I'm like, that's how I talk. And then my second reaction.
Finally, a movie for a white woman.
No, like, just like how she tells a story. And she's like, but yeah, and it was just like this, and da 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 da, and like side tangent, and blah, 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 blah. But then there was that, and then also how she, when she was telling the story and it was being acted out.
Oh, I love that.
It was very fun because mm-hmm. it reminded me of like Drunk History and stuff like that.
But like much gruesome. Yeah.
And but then like the high school guy, like the bad boy, I was like, he looks like he's like 47. Like, why?
Oh,
I was like, what's going on here?
Oh my God.
But yeah, so that's our cast. this format, we kind of just, I don't know, I just kind of threw it together. But
way to sell the episode,
eh? Hey, but I have a lot of different elements that I wanted to touch on because it was such a good movie, and there were a lot of different things I wanted to touch on.
Also, I helped.
And DJ right. did help.
He helped throw it together.
We threw it together collectively.
There you go.
So we're going to talk a little bit about Clive Barker and Tony Todd. I want to talk a little bit about Urban Legends. And then we'll get into the production of the film, and then the release, reception, legacy, and then we have some good discussion questions.
That's a normal,
as I like to do it, because Anthony's like super heavy on production stuff, and I'm just like cohesive.
For next week's episode, the production's very important. Yeah, we'll get ahead. Let's go.
You'll talk about it at the end, exactly. I'm sure. So Anthony's going to go ahead and take us through a little bit about Clive Barker.
Very little bit, but yes. Yeah. Clive Barker is an English writer, film director, and visual artist. And he primarily works within the horror and fantasy genres, and he grew in popularity primarily in the 1980s with the Books of Blood series.
Yeah.
There you go. Which set him up in his career as a premier horror writer. Since then, he's written several other novels. But yeah, Clive Barker does have that, like, you hear his name, you're like, what gruesome shit are we going to, you know, experience?
Well, when I hear Clive Barker, I think of what's coming up shortly.
Yeah. But his work has most notably been adapted into films. And you know, you, of course, might recognize this from the one name of a very, very popular film, which, of course, Alex does, and all of us recognize here. It's 1987's Hellraiser series, which is based off his novella, The Hellbound Heart. And I remember Hellraiser did have a very strong impact when I was a kid, but same. I have not seen it in like 2 decades at least.
Oh, I watched it like a year ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, my dad and I watched it. I think we went, me and Alex went and like had watched all of the movies.
We watched the first two.
Yeah, because Alex hadn't seen them, and I'm three. Like, you need to watch these movies. I think it was the first three.
Yeah, we dipped out halfway through the third one because we got bored.
Well, I do recall the third one sucking.
Yes.
Yeah,
a bunch of dick.
Not just like
the first two,
mile
like
dick.
Three dicks. At like least. This yes. is the third one. So yes.
Okay.
But he worked on the series as a director and the screenwriter for the first one, and he made appearances in Hellraiser 2 and 3 and Bloodline as either producer or writer. So he Hellraiser is a Clive Barker basically like. That's his shit right now.
That is what he has the most name notoriety for, but when I was researching him, he's done a bunch of stuff, so.
Yes, he's done. Well, I remember he put his name on some video games back in the day, too, that were, like, horror-based.
Yeah, he did some video games. He also designed some characters for comic books. Mm-hmm. Like, he's pretty versatile in terms of his creative influence in the horror genre.
And he's got a very recognizable name, too. So, yeah, Clive Barker. But he also, of course, did this fucking movie.
Right, of course, which is what brings us back. I wanted to talk about Clive Barker because it I feel like I would have been amiss if I hadn't at least brought him up.
Yeah, I mean, he's horror guy.
Right, yeah. He's horror guy.
He is horror man.
And we're going to be
horror man.
It's not late at all.
No. And we're going to be talking about another very famous horror man in a couple weeks.
Ooh, that's
so,
right.
So, but
Clive Barker is also gay. It's not important to the podcast, but I think it's important to mention for myself.
No, I think actually that's a very good point to bring up because, I mean, especially in this era too, like, even in the freaking 80s when he was coming up, being gay was pretty not popular.
Yeah, so
to be,
he
like,
came,
a prolific writer.
Yeah, he came out in the early 90s and a lot of people were like, what?
What?
But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. He's still talented. Guess what? Gay people are people. What? Oh, my God.
Hey, I'm talented. Okay, so.
That is
like a challenge right there.
Yeah. A challenger has approached.
All right. So, and then DJ is going to talk to us a little bit about Tony Todd, who is a horror icon in his own right.
Hell fucking yes. DJ, hit it.
Tony Todd. My mans. My homie. This motherfucker had real life bees in his mouth in this film. And I just think that's such a badass thing. So, respect, Tony Todd.
No, I agree.
So Tony Todd, a.k.a. Anthony Tyron Todd.
Cool first name.
I mean, it's all right. I mean, it's not Tony.
Don't you dare.
Has anyone ever called you Tony, ever?
Oh, yeah.
Or like Ant?
Ant's?
Ant's common. He calls himself Ant.
That's weird.
No, I'm going to go actually explain this. So, funny thing. Whenever, when you're an Anthony or a Tony, when you're a kid, you pick your side. And you pick, you're either going to be called Anthony or Tony. And if you get called one or the other, it doesn't feel good. So, I've known Tonys that get called Anthony.
And they hate it.
They hate that shit. But when somebody calls me Tony, I'm like, that's not what I've ever gone by. Ever. And Ant... This is going to be the worst month to say this generalization here, but most of my black friends have called me Ant. as an abbreviation for some
really?
Reason.
That's kind of cool.
It's a very consistent thing, Ant. I don't know why.
Maybe it's because you're a small, small man.
Maybe. A homeless person did say, hey, so who knows?
Oh my gosh. No, I get that because I got that growing up because my full name is Alexandra. And when I was a kid, I didn't go by Alex, so I went by Allie. Mm-hmm. So anytime someone called me Alex or called me Alexandra growing up, I was just like, that's not my fucking name.
Like, hey, why don't you shut your fucking face?
Yeah,
and
no.
But don't call Alex Alexandria. Unless we're talking about her straight alter ego, who wears powder blue pantsuits. That's a story for another time.
Oh, okay. When we're not recording.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
I never did wear a powder blue pantsuit, by the way. This I is just...
I'm fascinated by the idea of a straight alter ego, though. That like is awesome. And she wears so much pink.
I wear...
It's blue.
It's powder blue.
It's,
because
yeah,
it's...
powder blue.
It, she's very anti-feminine.
Oh,
yes.
My straight alter ego.
Straight alter ego.
Anyway.
Anywho.
Enough about me.
Back to Tony Todd. The real person. The real reason we're here
yes,
tonight.
Yes, exactly.
The real reason. The reason for the season, if you will.
That's funny. All right. Back to where I was. So Tony Todd is most iconic for his role in Candyman. But he's made very notable appearances in other films and other franchises, such as Final Destination. So from 2000 to 2011, he has been in every Final Destination film, which I think I brought up to Alex, because that's what I recognized him from other than Candyman.
Yes.
I'm like, hey, it's Tony Todd. I have this theory that Tony Todd actually is Death in all of the Final Destination films because he plays the mortician.
I think that's a common theory.
Cool. Well, I thought about it without discussing it with other people, so.
I'm totally organic because I'm a fucking genius.
I am, and I'm not going to deny it.
Okay,
and I
continue.
Know, all right.
Side note, he is fucking awesome in Final Destination.
He is
fucking awesome in that movie. Movie series.
I don't remember him.
No?
In any of them.
Well, then
that makes me really sad.
Watch the fuck out of Final Destination.
But I've only seen Final Destination a couple times.
I've seen each of them, like, a
multiple
couple
times.
Times at least. Yes.
Anywho, back to Tony Todd. So he's also been in films such as the 1990 Night of the Living Dead. He's been in Star Trek The Next Generation from 1990 to 1991. And the Transformers franchise in 2009. He was also in a really good episode of Criminal Minds called The Fox.
This isn't season one. It's a really good episode.
It's a season one episode.
I can attest to this.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's season one.
The early Fox. Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
So
early.
Probably,
yeah.
Probably
early
the most
Criminal
pure,
Minds.
Like.
Yeah. Perfect. Like I'm pretty sure Mandy Patinkin was still in it. Like.
Mm.
Those are words I know. Yes.
I do like Mandy Patinkin.
Well, yeah. Never mind.
Who the fuck is Mandy Patinkin?
Gideon.
No, he hasn't. He's never seen Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
The whole point of if this is your first episode, first of all, I'm sorry. Second of all, Anthony has never seen Criminal Minds. I've seen every episode about 30 times, so
yes.
I always make Criminal Minds references, and Anthony's just like, "Yes, things I know."
Right. It's a common thread. You'll understand if you keep listening.
Yes,
please. Please keep listening.
All right. So he's been in over 100 TV shows and movies over his career. Look him up. He's great.
Sure.
Yeah, super prolific voice actor. He's been in a bunch of things. He also loves giving interviews. He's very open about his experience in the horror genre, and he's really open, like, kind of just, like, talking about his experience and advice as an actor, which I think is really cool.
And he was the Light of Living Dead 1990 remake. I actually watched a lot when I was a kid, too. Tony Todd, yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking loved him. That's how I knew him, and then I watched the original, and I'm like, That's not Tiny Town.
No. That's not Tiny Town. So Alex is the person who knows all of the actors' names.
Yes.
And I know characters, but Tony Todd is a name that I'm like, I can pinpoint him to at least 7 different things.
There you go. See?
So now that we've gone through some Clive Barker, some Tony Todd, I'm going to talk about urban legends as a whole. So Candyman is about urban legends, kind of. But there's a lot of horror films that are based around urban legends, and we're actually really lucky because a lot of these films are garbage, and that kind of makes them a little bit more enjoyable, in my opinion.
That's true, including urban legends.
including the film Urban Legends.
Which is a genuine garbage, yes.
But still watch it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking Chainmail, right? Or Chain Letter? Chain Letter.
Chain Letter. Chain Letter was fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't saying, I wasn't going to, no, I wasn't going to talk shit. Anyway, so for those of you who don't know, urban legends are a modern form of folklore. Because this film took place in 1992, urban legends have grown even more since then from the context of this film. We've moved beyond alligators in the sewers in New York City, and we've moved towards viral Facebook posts about ghosts being in your room at night. Everyone has seen this. I did it. Like, I saw it on Facebook when I joined when I was 13 and MySpace. Yeah.
MySpace.
Right? But, like, those things where it's like, if you wake up between the hours of midnight and 3, there's a 90% chance someone's looking at you.
If you don't send this to 10 of your followers, then Camila will come and kill you at night.
That was a MySpace fucking
thing. Oh, yeah, sure. Totally.
So those things terrified the shit out of me because I'm very superstitious. Mm-hmm. So I was like, if I don't do this, I'm going to die.
Like, yeah. Why would you put this on me right now? I need to get homework done.
Yeah, so
I'm a teenager. I'm hormonal. Yeah. Stop it.
So people would, I've seen these, like, I've seen things that are, like, retweeting 35 seconds or else like your mom's gonna die or like dumb shit like that. Like I've seen on like Twitter, I see it on Twitter mainly, Tumblr back when Tumblr was a thing and I was on Tumblr, all of these like Facebook type things, like the chain mail or like the retweet thing is super super popular because it almost guarantees interaction. It almost guarantees like you get people who are like willing to like interact with your content.
It's a way to artificially boost those stats, you know?
Yeah, right.
People also love to test fate.
Yeah, but also like all the people who make those posts are just like little shitheads on the internet at home, like just like you
unless
know
it's chainmail.
I don't think so.
It's someone's grandmother that's just like, somebody sent this shit to me. And I don't
it's true. It's true.
Shut up, grandma.
Anyway, urban legends are usually spread by a wide variety of media, including newspapers, emails, but especially social media, which we kind of talked about earlier. Surprisingly, many quote-unquote big urban legends have passed through the decades with only a few changes to the lore, so to speak, surrounding these stories. So these are your big ones. These are like the elevator game. These are like someone's going to be under your bed tonight if you don't do this. It's
La Llorona.
Well, is that a modern thing? Because I thought that was more like a folklore.
I mean, contemporary folklore.
Yeah.
I would say it was something that they had like in the 1600s.
I mean, I figured.
But I mean, like, you know, back in like probably the 1920s,
Okay.
Watch out for that bitch.
Well, also, they're making a movie.
Another
movie. Because I know other ones exist, but I think this is the first like big, like, distributor type.
Is La Llorona not going to look fucking terrible? Because I feel like that's been the worst thing about any previous adaptation.
I'm sure.
Like, yeah, you know what? I have a La Llorona recommendation where she doesn't look like a demon monster.
Oh.
It's not very different from the lore that I was told as a child, but like pretty similar.
Okay.
So it's actually called La Llorona. I remember my grandma had like the big like black box VHS of it.
A VHS? Oh, that's gotta be cool. That's gotta be fucking cool. Okay, we gotta find that shit.
Yeah.
So, do you guys want to hear a funny story?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so when I was in fifth grade, I just moved to the Central Valley area.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Bakersfield, Fresno, that area.
Oh, my God, you poor bastard.
I lived there for...
I mean, literally, you poor bastard.
Yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, exactly. I lived there for 2 years, and this
those
was...
times that your mom doesn't like to talk about.
Yes.
Cool.
So we moved there, lived there for 2 years. I don't like to talk about it either. So fourth, fourth and fifth grade. But this was my, I had moved from my primarily white elementary school to the Central Valley as a 10-year-old. Yes. So I was exposed to many things for the very first time. Some of said children picked up on this and thought it would be a good idea to fuck with the weird little white girl. So they told me the story of, I'm going to butcher her name.
La Llorona?
Her. Yeah. I always am afraid I'm going to butcher it, so I never say it.
Her human name was rumored to be Maria.
Miss Maria. Anyway, so they told me the story and were just like, so where do you live? And I'm like, over on this side of town. And they're like, they said, I heard she's over by there and da-da-da-da-da-da. And like scared the shit out of me. I was terrified. I thought this was totally true. I was terrified.
That sounds like asshole Mexican children. Yeah, I can attest to that. I would do that to somebody.
I have done that.
No, I told you. Yeah, I've done some fucked up shit. Exactly. Yes. Oh, what? You're not aware of how this works? Well, you better watch the fuck out.
Yeah, but then they also proceeded to bully me for the next year and a half. Oh, so.
That's rude. What was the good stuff you were exposed to? Did you get like good elotes or like?
No, I got nothing good.
Oh, damn. Right.
I got nothing good. Yeah, no.
That sucks.
Well, that's why Anthony and I are here to change the game for you.
Yes, right. There you go.
No, yeah, not talking about it. Okay, so.
I don't know why I brought that up, guys.
No, I wanted to tell the story, but yes. Yeah, no. So, a little bit more about urban legends. So, they're mainly morality or cautionary tales framed with extensive plots and characters. You know, most of these have, like, important plot points that are in the beginning that tie everything together at the end. Like, there's a very specific formula about what an urban legend is. My favorite, well, not my favorite, but like one of like the more notable ones that I think everyone was terrified of was the dog licking the hand under the bed thing. That scary story. Do you remember that?
That's freaky. But yes, I do remember.
Do you remember? Yeah. Do you know what we're talking about?
No.
What's okay. This? Okay. So there was this, and this is like an example of an urban legend, and you're supposed to tell it like it's a story of someone you know. So growing up, there was this kid in my town who he stayed at home while his parents went out to the opera or whatever the fuck rich white people do. So they went out and they left the kid at home, and he didn't really like being left alone, but he always had his dog with him who would stay under his bed. And whenever he was nervous, he'd put his hand over the side of the bed and the dog would lick his hand and make him feel better. So he, and there's a couple different versions of this story. He hears a sound in the bathroom. And he's like, it sounds like someone is stepping into the bathroom. Like, he's terrified. So he goes out and he doesn't see anything. And he goes back and he sits on his bed and he puts his hand down. And his dog licks his hand. And so he kind of starts to doze off and go to sleep after, you know, he's just like waiting kind of for his parents to get home. And then he hears another sound in the living room. So he goes out into the living room and he doesn't see anything. But then he comes back and he turns on the light in his room. And on his wall, there's the body of his dog. Is like pinned on the wall, and written in his blood is humans can lick hands too.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh, that's so, a terrifying sentence.
I didn't hear about that urban legend until I saw the movie Urban Legend Bloody Mary.
Oh, the second one.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know there were multiple.
But I also saw it when I was a kid.
So
I heard that story when I was a kid and I was just like, this is fascinating. Tell me more. Like, I was scared shitless, but it was so interesting to me. And that's kind of like, so like, those are like, that's a really common urban legend or some variation therein.
Yes.
Of like, someone does something and there's like a creepy message written on the wall in blood. Like, very, very big thing is is something written on the wall in blood.
Okay. I think that
first urban legend I was exposed to was Bloody Mary.
Yes. Oh, yeah, Bloody Mary. I mean, Bloody I think Mary's most like people. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it was actually not, it's not really an urban legend, but like in terms of like ghost story type stuff, light as a feather, stiff as a board.
See, I didn't hear about that until high school.
My mom did it as a kid, and she swore by it, so I never did it. She always was just like, she swore by it, which is an urban legend.
Yeah. I actually did the Bloody Mary thing, though.
I did, too. Yeah. Nothing happened.
No, somebody turned off the lights to fuck with somebody, and we're like, eh, it's not working.
I was busy having seances with my grandma.
Oh, okay.
Jesus.
Different kind of childhood.
Difference.
But, yeah. So, like I said, they're morality or cautionary tales, but urban legends also rely on humor, mystery, and horror to get their points across. Mm-hmm. So, usually, some of these have, like, a comedic element or a dramatic irony element to
dramatic
it.
Dramatic irony, for sure.
So, it kind of makes it an intriguing story. So, if you're as into urban legends as I am, I highly recommend checking out Last Podcast on the Left's Urban Legends episode. It's one of their older episodes, so it's not as, like, tight as their new ones are, but they're fun. It's a good fun episode if you need something that isn't like dark and depraved and depressing.
Okay,
lots of D's. But yeah, so that's a good one. And they also go over some urban legends, like, and then urban legends, mm-hmm. like popular chain emails and stuff like that. Two people I wanted to bring up before we move on to the production. There are two murderers that are associated with the Candyman name.
Ooh.
And have references, or people have called them Candyman, and people are who have said that they inspired this movie, which is not true.
No.
Clive Barker wrote the story, and then it was adapted to, mm-hmm. you know, we'll go into it, but they're very different. So there's Dean Corll, who his family owned a candy factory, which hence the name, the Candyman. And he killed a bunch of teenage boys before being killed by a bunch of teenage boys. Well, two.
He was pretty brutal, if I remember.
Yeah, so there was a lot. So he would basically throw parties, lure in teenage boys, get them to mm-hmm. trust him. Like, he also was a child molester, all that stuff.
Yeah, I remember. Okay, yes. Yeah, his story was really hard to follow. Like, not hard, like, not told well, but, like, hard because I was like, that? I need to stop listening right now.
Yeah. So that was that one. So yeah, that's a little bit about Dean Corll. The other person being Ronald Clark O'Brien. If you've seen the Killer Legends documentary, you've heard of this guy. He's also called the Candyman. He's also known as the man who killed Halloween. He was a murderer who killed his son over an insurance payout.
Oh.
He took out like $200,000 insurance things on all of his children. They were all supposed to get so basically, if you don't know the story, he poisoned his son with a cyanide-laced pixie stick.
Ooh.
That he planted in his son's Halloween candy, and later when he got home, he ate the candy and he died in the hospital.
Jeez.
It was this whole thing.
He died
thing.
On the way to the hospital.
Yeah. So it's this whole fucked up thing. And, I mean, they caught him, and he was put on death row in Texas.
This fast track over there. Yeah.
Yes. Well, this was also in the 80s.
Well, his execution got pushed back, like, 3 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, so, if you've seen the Killer Legends documentary, this is where the Candyman legend, they cite that as where the Candyman legend came from.
Mm.
But yeah, so there's two people in recent history who have been deemed or dubbed the Candyman.
Okay, but no beads. Gotcha. No beads.
No. No.
You know what we're watching, right?
Yeah. That just reminds me of the bees question mark, the Cards Against Humanity card, where it's bees question mark.
Oh, I was thinking Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Bees?
Anyway, so that's it pretty much for all of the extra little fluffy stuff. Let's get
into very, very interesting fluffy stuff.
Thank you.
Urban Legends, Clive Barker, and of course praising of Tony Todd is something I can always get behind.
And it's all related to one another.
Yeah.
Candyman is an urban legend movie.
Exactly. And people were killed with this fucking candy in the last thing we just talked about. Yeah.
Thank you for explaining the podcast. Moving on!
Let's learn how this bitch was made. How about that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the film got its start purely by chance after Bernard Rose met Clive Barker in passing, and Rose expressed his interest in The Forbidden. And Barker agreed to license the rights to the story. And I hit the court, so. Watch out, listeners, in your cars.
We are recording in my apartment, and we have yet to get a thing to dangle the microphone.
Oh, shit. Okay, after this. While Barker's story discusses the English class system, Bernard Rose based his version around the green public housing development in Chicago and focused on racial themes and social class in the in inner city United States, which is a really fucking cool setting for a horror film.
Oh yeah, totally.
It's a really cool fucking
setting. It gave it a much more like modern kind of flair to it.
Yeah.
Because if it had taken place, I mean, you know, in...
in an actual condominium area?
Well, I mean, that's where they filmed, because they all filmed on location.
Uh-huh. But maybe like a, you know, like a, oh, it's condos.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Yeah.
Yeah, precisely.
It would just be fucking Paranormal Activity. But...
I hate Paranormal Activity.
Really? The first one?
All of them.
Oh.
Really? Oh, that's I love the first three and the marked one. That's my shit. All of them just, again, suck. Maybe six dicks this time.
Let's shake it up a little
bit. Shake it up a bit. All right. The screenplay, the inspiration for the screenplay hasn't actually been confirmed, but journalist Steve Bagheera?
Yeah.
Bagheera? Oh, okay. Believes inspiration was drawn from a pair of articles written in 1987 and 1990.
I forgot to add that he wrote.
Oh, that he wrote these. Okay. About the murder of Ruthie Mae McCoy. Sound familiar? She was a resident in Chicago's housing projects, and in 1987, she was murdered by an intruder who entered her apartment through her medicine cabinet. Jesus.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
It's like they open the medicine cabinet, and this intruder goes, "Oh, my America."
Well, no, because, like, this, like, the McCoy... the use of the last name McCoy. We see that in Candyman. We also, this is exactly how What's-Her-Face was also murdered.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just like, the screenplay is very obviously, there's inspiration drawn here.
Touching on some points for sure. Yes. So. Before filming even occurred, controversy, which was apparent on the set, there was some controversy that the film was relying heavily on racial stereotypes and depicted extensive racist violence. The director, Rose, had to attend meetings with the NAACP because the producers of the film were worried about the film's content, you know, based around the race stuff. But after reading the film script, the NAACP asked, "Why are we even having this meeting? You know, this is just good fun."
Literally, they were just like, "It's a fucking movie."
Dude, this is another thing of like, well, are we being like super like white people just like, well, we don't want to offend anybody, and blah, 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 and blah. And they're just like, dude, you can talk about black people. Like, it's okay.
You can say...
all the ones who write the IMDBs.
IMDB? Yeah. All the IMDB, like, who write the synopsises, or the synopses.
Is saying black insulting?
Yes.
TC.
Don't use a hard K.
African
Oh, you used the hard C in the African. Like, that's the thing that always makes me mad. Like, it's just like, oh, we can't. Don't be so overly sensitive, because that's a little racist too.
Right. Well, it's also, it's like the fine line. Like, it's like, it's the people who make fun of those. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's very interesting to me that.
Yeah. It reminds me of, like, the characters in Get Out.
Exactly. I would have voted for Obama for a third time if I could.
Exactly.
That kind of... that shit.
But in terms of the actual film, the film's opening credits featured a great aerial view of Chicago.
This was awesome.
Yeah, it actually was really cool when we first played it, but it's actually pretty revolutionary for its time. A quote here, "We did that with an incredible new machine called the Skycam, which can shoot up to a 500mm lens with no vibration," Rose told the Independent, which, that's actually really fucking cool.
Yeah.
I forget that technology has...
Well, this was, 92, so it was being filmed in, what, 91, probably?
Mm-hmm. And then think about it also, like, 10 years after that, Sam Raimi had a very similar cam for Spider-Man, which actually showed POV and, like, Spider-Man shots swinging through live New York.
Yeah.
And, like, that technology is from this shit. Yes, we, exactly. That's what Spider-Man says every time. He's like, "I'm about to fight some criminals. We."
Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse.
wait, The Spider-Verse takes him to fucking Chicago in 1991 in his projects. I can't save anyone.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, that's awesome. The bees in the film with Miles Morales, so he's, like, kind of cool. With
Yeah.
All right, we're getting too nerdy here.
You're getting too nerdy. Bring it back.
All right, bees.
Bees, oh, God.
The bees in the film were bred specifically to appear on screen. Holy shit.
Yeah.
The bees that were shown in the iconic and creepy as hell scene were fucking real. Out loud. Real.
Like...
Oh.
All real live bees.
And,
in his mouth.
In his fucking mouth. And you see it as a kid, and it looks so fucking real because it's real. And this is back.
Well, you have that question where you're like, there's no way that can be real. And then you find out later that it's like totally fucking real.
I was thinking it.
I was today years now.
There were some questionable CGI experiments with this film, which is fine because it was made in 91.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you can tell the bees were genuine.
Yes.
Like, there was no question.
Oh my god. Freaked the fuck out of me even watching it just not that long ago. The bees that are shown were in the iconic... Oh, I already said that shit. Whatever. They were bred specifically for the film so they looked appropriately terrifying but were less dangerous to those on set. The filmmakers used actually newborn bees that were about 12 hours old. So they looked fully grown but they didn't have those powerful stingers.
Probably a good...
Stingers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony Todd was guaranteed $1,000 each time that he was stung, which happened 23 times over the entire film series production.
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, no, $22,000, you're like, sorry, buddy, here you go.
Right.
Virginia Madsen also had an issue with the bees, as she was super fucking allergic. Bernard Rose, however, didn't believe this shit.
Which is such a dick move.
Yeah.
I don't believe this allergy that you think that you have that you experience with your own body.
No, this is... Right?
DJ, eat the shellfish. It's all in your head.
Okay. I had a former client who was one of those people who were, what do you call them? Fuck.
Assholes?
No, like that, like, alternative medicine.
Holistic?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Holistic,
like,
medicine.
You can just get over all your allergies if you believe. You're a fucking idiot. I have to write your stupid website. And then she left us, but I'm like, good, because she...
I hope she's listening.
I hope so. She was among one of the dumbest motherfuckers I've ever come across as a client. You know what? I also think Bernard Rose is like, I really want this shot, so I'm going to make her have to earn her fucking bee thing. Like,
yeah.
He totally wasn't thinking about her. He's like, I just want the shot.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, whatever. Anyway,
yeah.
Continue.
But yeah, when she did, he actually told her that she needed to prove it with testing. And then when she did, he saw that she was actually more allergic to wasps. And he told her that they could keep the paramedics on standby and that she would be fine.
So literally they were like, you're more allergic to wasps. Let's just stick you in with these bees.
What kind of logic is that?
Well, technically, you can be more allergic to one or the other.
It's true. I just had a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just like wondering how many bees Tony Todd swallowed.
Yes.
None. So he had a dental dam in the back of
okay.
his mouth.
Oh, okay.
So he wouldn't swallow them or they wouldn't fly into his throat.
Okay.
This is not included, but I did read it. So
perfect.
I am including it now.
Yay!
There is your fun fact.
Glad they took more precautions over bees flying in Tony Todd's mouth than protecting
go.
The person who's allergic to bees.
Right? You're like, but
mildly.
Keep your fucking mouth open.
Mildly.
Oh, that is hilarious. The film was shot on location at the Cabrini Green in Chicago. In 2011, the last remaining high-rise in the housing project was demolished in order to gain permission to shoot there. Rose agreed to cast some of the locals as extras in Candyman, which is actually pretty cool.
That's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You should cast the locals for sure. Yeah.
Well,
also, just pay the locals.
Right.
Lots of money.
Well, also, like, just for the right to use Cabrini Green, because,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's, you know, a not popular, well-known housing project
mm-hmm.
that, you know. Had,
wank.
As we all
no,
know.
No,
no but, yeah, so there's that. I don't know. I think it's probably just good taste to pay the people who live there to be extras.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to do. You're using their fucking property, guys.
Yeah, you're using their community.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Eddie Murphy was actually initially considered for the role of the Candyman, but the role went to Tony Todd when they figured out that they couldn't actually afford Eddie Murphy. I mean, Donkey himself.
I feel like that worked in their favor, because I don't...
Eddie Murphy would suck balls.
I don't think, because Eddie Murphy is known as like a funny man now. Mm-hmm. I don't think that movie would have aged as well as it did if Eddie Murphy had been in it instead.
He was still a funny. He was the funny man.
I know, but that's what I'm saying.
He was also
like
a problematic funny man.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
If he would have been a piece of crap.
If he would have been Candyman in his fucking raw outfit, would have been oh. With the fucking red leather, yeah. With the open chest.
Clive Barker's just watching with his hands over his mouth, just like, I don't know if I can do this.
I think we've made a grave mistake.
And he's like, yeah, you'll be mine.
It was always you, Helen.
It was always you, Helen. I would love this idea of Eddie Murphy just... That would have sucked.
If they did a Candyman parody, I'd want Eddie Murphy to play Candyman.
I would want Eddie Murphy to be that for sure. In his fucking raw outfit, like hands down, with bees just flocking out of his chest. It was raw or delirious? I can't remember. Virginia Madsen was originally cast as Bernadette, but was later not cast as Rose wanted Bernie to be a black character. Bernard Rose's then wife, Alexandra Pig, was slated to play Helen. Madsen and Pig were also good friends at the time as well. Right before the filming commenced, Pig learned that she was pregnant, and the role eventually did get offered to Madsen. If she had declined, a producer admitted that they wanted to recruit Sandra Bullock for the part.
Eddie Murphy, Sandra Bullock. Oh,
so it's not even a horror film.
It's a comedy.
It's a horror comedy, and then Alex would have hated it.
Oh my gosh.
Correct.
Sandra Bullock would have been like the same character from Speed.
Yeah.
We gotta stop.
Give her
these
a blindfold.
Bees. These bees are traveling at 0.12 miles an hour.
Okay, but I want Eddie Murphy in a parody of this saying, I am tired of these motherfucking bees in my motherfucking chest.
Oh my gosh, Sam Jackson as the Candyman would be the shit.
Not mad at it.
No, I'd be down with that.
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah. Did you say my name motherfucking 5 times?
Motherfucker.
I will never...
Bitch, calm down.
Bitch, I'm the Candyman.
I will never forget the most, like, perfectly placed. I've had it with these motherfucking blank on this motherfucking plane. We, DJ and I, were at Hollywood Horror Nights,
mm-hmm.
and they had a little thing where it was like clowns on a plane. Do you remember the walkthrough?
Yes,
Yes. We were walking through. I'm terrified. I'm clinging on to DJ, and I'm just like, I have had it with these motherfucking clowns on these motherfucking planes.
Oh, I will say, one of the best screenings of a film I ever went to was Snakes on a Plane, because we went opening nights at like 11 with the drunk crowd, and it was the most like insane. Nobody gave a shit. Everybody was like, woo, 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 woo. Like, oh shit, they bit the titty. Like, all that stuff. Yeah. Like, all that. It was the most amazing fucking thing. And at the end.
I love active crowds for movies. Like, if you have, like, a good entranced, like, vocal crowd, I'm into it. If there are people talking bullshit or like just like chatting behind me, that drives me up the wall. But mm-hmm. if there's a well placed, like, then it's great.
It.
Yes.
So, like, us seeing Get Out,
Which I did talk about
last week. That's right.
I was just listening to that episode.
What do you call though? Actually, sneak preview next week in terms of active crowds, big focus on that next week.
Definitely.
You'll understand why for sure.
Yes.
Keep going.
Well, I just had this realization because you were talking about snakes on the plane. And I'd just like to say I went on a plane for the first time last year, and I just realized part of my fear of being on planes is watching Snakes on a Plane and Final Destination at a very, very young
very
age.
Formative
it was
years.
Very, very tender.
Oh, no. Oh, Snakes on a Plane. Okay. But, also back to Snakes on a Plane, I remember, because it ends on a beach. Like,
yes.
The little, like, thing. The last thing anybody said before the credits roll was just one guy in the very front row. At the top of his lungs, like, snakes on a beach! It was the best shit ever.
That is, oh god, good, well-placed, like, yelling.
Dude, the whole crowd lost it. Like, of just full of fucking, it was a packed crowd, and everybody lost their goddamn minds when you said that.
Oh, that's so funny.
We were drunk as shit.
High key, I feel really proud when I do things like that, and there's, like, crowds of laughter.
Yeah,
I'm like, thanks, I'm funny.
You're like, you love me.
You really love me. Pours pig's blood on you.
I was thinking the bass, but gonna carry it, yes. okay, back to Candyman. Alright, this shit eventually did get released in theaters. Candyman's initial release was in 1992 at the Toronto International Film Festival. It made its theatrical release in the U.S. on October 16th in 1992, and it did gross over $25 million, close to $26, as we were saying. Very fucking successful.
Yeah. Which is, for a horror film in the early 90s, oh, that's yeah. also, like, a debatably black horror film.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah, I would say it is, for yeah. sure. I mean, if we're going to talk about Blackula, like, William Crane was a white dude and directed Blackula, so...
Well, I was thinking more, like, so far, like, all of the films have been... No, incorrect. I'm completely talking bullshit. Continue.
Oh, okay. and it did spawn a franchise, obviously. But in terms of actually being released, Candyman was actually released in home video in February of 1993, so pretty far after the release, actually. Holy shit. No, it wasn't. It was October.
It was six months after.
Yeah, we're good. But in terms of actually Candyman being put in people's fucking homes, which is how most of us, I believe, actually watch this shit.
Yeah, I think there's about 500 million bunches of VHSs of Candyman.
Yeah, out there, for sure.
I'm pretty sure I saw it on TV.
Yeah, no, it's definitely on TV also.
What does a TV edit for this movie look like?
It doesn't.
Nowadays, they just show all the shit.
Well, I'm talking about, like, if you were younger, it was on TV?
Oh, I don't know. I really can't remember. It was still scary as fuck.
Yeah.
But yeah, this thing actually did get released in February of 1993. And then it also got a special edition DVD release in 2004. And then it got a Blu-ray release in September 1st, 2011. And Germany actually got a limited edition Digibook that was made available in 2016.
So
this
current.
Has like this Candyman permeates fucking everything, and people want to watch this movie basically.
Yeah.
So yes, Blu-ray editions made their way from France, Italy, Spain, Japan, Denmark. Tony Todd is all over the fucking world with this goddamn role,
mm-hmm.
and people, you know, they buy this media. I remember Candyman mostly from Blockbuster and like rental stores.
Yeah,
that's where I got.
That's where I saw it too.
Mm-hmm. I didn't watch it in theaters, I don't think, because...
Well,
I don't know.
92.
Yeah. collector's edition of Candyman would have a release on November 20th in 2018 in the U.S., actually, too. So
also, a collector's edition, like, just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if y'all want a collector's edition, it has a really good audio, a whole booklet, 6 lobby cards. Okay, they have fucking lobby cards. I don't know what that is.
That's from the UK one.
Oh, is that
the
UK one?
Yeah, so the UK has a special edition with, like, fancy audio, a collector booklet.
And a poster.
A reversible cover. No, it's a reversible.
A
reversible
poster and a reversible. Goddamn, you UK motherfuckers. Oh, we have some listeners in the UK.
Yeah, so if y'all want to send some of those our way.
Yeah. I mean, the DVD will not play on our DVD players. But you can send us the posters. We'll totally take it.
Well, what I was also going to say is, like, this sounds like a K-pop album. Like, you get, like, posters, you get, like, photo cards, you get, like... Yeah.
Except it's with Virginia Madsen with bees in her mouth.
Completely different.
Yep. But then Candyman, of course, all this, like, stuff with Candyman being released and its exposure is because it's a very, very, very well-received film, which Dee Dee's going to go into why that is, of course.
Ta-da! Yes. It's me. Alright, so Rotten Tomato reports that 73% of 52 surveyed critics gave the film a positive review. The average rating was a 6.3 out of 10, which I think should be higher.
I think it should be higher.
So, what I found in general is that people acknowledge the importance of the film, but they also very heavily critique it, which is interesting. Which I had very few problems with this movie.
No, same here. But I mean, we can dive into this in a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into discussion.
Oh yeah.
All right. So the site's critical consensus reads: though it ultimately sacrifices some mystery in the name of gory thrills, Candyman is a nuanced, effectively chilling tale that benefits from an interesting premise and some fine performances.
I can agree with that.
Fine performances.
Wonderful performances.
Mm-hmm. They were damn fine performances.
Damn fine.
Yes. And then actually, yeah, the what are they talking about here? Premise is fantastic.
Yes.
Well, it's a great, like, idea, because, like I said, you're in the beginning of the modern birthing of the urban legend.
Mm-hmm.
You're
doing it in a good setting.
Yeah, and then you're getting, you know, it's interesting because you get that modern take on it. You also get grad students that are in school buildings or
that
like,
have bells that ring.
Yeah, at a university that have bells that ring.
Oh my gosh.
And the classrooms look just like they do now.
Huh.
They haven't changed since 91.
That's very true, actually. Ugh.
It was weird. It was weird seeing this. Anywho, so in a 1992 story in the Chicago Tribune, some high-profile black filmmakers expressed their distaste surrounding the lore and how film seemed to perpetuate several racist stereotypes. I'm quoting, "There's no question that this film plays on white middle-class fears of black people," director Carl Franklin of Out of Times and The Devil in a Blue Dress said, "It unabashedly uses racial stereotypes and destructive myths to create shock. I found it hokey and unsettling. It didn't work for me because I don't share those fears or buy into those myths."
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, okay. I have similar thoughts because I also had some, you know, critiques of the film while I was watching it, kind of like from a kid now as a...
It's all with more perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, we'll get into that during the discussion.
I am interested in this.
Yes, would you say that you feel like there are racist stereotypes?
Yeah. There's like 90s like super predator racist stereotypes that they have in there. Like there's like back in the day, the Newt Gingrich would have lost his shit, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Well, there's that, and then also like I personally, I mean, with a very different experience of being in the hood as a white person, like I like the way that the like dudes outside of the building were like harassing them like has never happened to me. Like people generally don't do that. Like if you're getting harassed, it's usually out like people like say something and then they kind of either you engage or you don't and they move on,
which is interesting because I have seen and experienced like people like that harassing people in that manner, but they were in the film.
Yeah, so
I thought it was really interesting.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay, let's get to this shit real quick, and we're back.
Yeah.
Even after earning a supporting actress nomination in 2005 for Alexander Payne's Sideways, I didn't really like that movie. In 2012, Virginia Madsen said that Candyman is still the role she is most recognized for. Yeah, that makes fucking sense.
Yeah.
The character Candyman came in at number 8 on Bloody Disgusting's top 13 slashers in horror movie history, and ranked the same on... Was it Ugo's?
Yeah.
Top 11 slashers. Tony Todd made number 53 on Retro Crush's The 100 Greatest Horror Movie Performances. Only 50 fucking 3?
I know. It should have been higher.
That's stupid.
In their defense, Tony Todd did not get a lot of screen time in the first movie.
But he didn't. I think that's brilliant.
I mean, it was a well-made decision.
Yes,
but...
it makes every moment he has count. Because, you built to Tony Todd, and he comes in and fucking delivers.
Yeah.
53, suck my dick, whoever this person is. Suck 53 dicks. We're just going to keep adding.
Oh, yeah.
among the other accolades, it was widely regarded as a contemporary horror classic. Fuck yeah, it is. Hell yes.
Like, in general, I feel like a lot of people, that's what they consider it. It's, you know, that's what the...
The story being based in an urban legend, too, like you were pointing out earlier, it really helps bolster the whole film in terms of its, like, iconography, in terms of, like, its status.
Well, everyone also knows Candyman now.
Yes.
You know, or is familiar with it as a horror icon. I was not familiar with the urban legend. I was just kind of more familiar with the...
franchise.
Yeah. Like, sort of like, oh, yeah, it's a guy with a hook. And he kills people, like, you know.
Bees.
Which also...
Bees.
Which also ties into the man with a hook for a hand urban legend.
Yeah, no, he's pulling from Bloody Mary and everything. Like, he's an amalgamation of some good shit.
Yeah, totally.
As mentioned in our Get Out episode, a remake is currently in development, although no one has been cast in the role of Candyman. Oh, who could it fucking be? Rumor has it that...
Murphy.
Oh my gosh. Was it Lakeith Stanfield?
Lakeith.
Atlanta, Sorry to Bother You and Get Out would possibly star in the movie, but not as Candyman. Rather, he would star as a visual artist named Anthony.
I hope he doesn't die. Yeah.
Well, he plays, like, basically, he's the new Helen.
Okay.
Oh.
I would like that.
So he's the one. He's the one who gets tied into the lore.
Dude, and that'd be fucking cool.
Further
yeah.
elaborating, because for some reason I didn't put this in the whatever. So for the film, they really want to create the film like in the same vein as the lore, but not a tried and true remake. As in, they're not going to retell the story of the first film.
Okay.
They're kind of. It's a continuation.
That's good. They shouldn't touch the first film, I don't think, actually. It's kind of its own standalone
film. Right. I think it'll be interesting, especially because Candyman in the first three movies, because I know he also, at some point, you get to see, like, the actual scene where he's murdered in the second or third one. So, like, by the end of the third one, I feel like there's already such a set lore that doing a remake would just be... Like, people wouldn't like that. They want something new, and they would want, like, a new sort of twist.
Mm-hmm. I mean, have it be, like, just Candyman. Like, he's a legend.
Yeah.
The story can go with any number of people because you just gotta say Candyman five times.
Right.
That's it. But we're done, guys.
Yeah.
Well, no, we're not done. We got some discussion.
We have some discussion, but that's it for production and sort of facts about the movie.
Yes.
So, first off, overall thoughts, both of you, on the movie? Like, would you say, like, I don't know, give it, like, a... Out of 10 bees.
Alright, how many bees? How many bees?
I'd give it like a 7.5 bees.
Ooh.
Alright. Pretty high.
8 bees.
8 bees?
8 bees.
I'd give it a...
5 bees.
Okay.
12 bees!
I would give it a 6.5 bees.
Okay, interesting.
6.5.
So, why 7.5 bees? What are the deficiencies? Why are there two other... bees and like half of one that are like nah.
Well, one I just wanted to cut half of the bee.
Aww.
Half of this 12-hour-old
bees.
Bee,
no, bees are endangered. Plant good things for bees.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Take care of the bees.
So we need more Candymen. Break us the.
Just
bees.
Don't like cut off another black man's hand and cover him with honey. There are other ways.
That's true.
But we've evolved.
That's not how you attract bees anymore.
We black men.
We have the technology.
It's not 1991 anymore.
Anyway.
I just imagine, like, again, I'm thinking in comedy of, like, someone doing that to a person, but that song that's like, oh, sugar, sugar, honey, honey, you are my candy girl, just, like, playing in the background while it's all happening.
That's... Oh, while the whole backstory's happening.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. But it's from the white people's perspective,
exactly.
So they're just like, we're getting them.
Come here, Candyman.
Sugar and the cancer in the back. He's just like wailing in the back. Like, what are you doing?
A chorus of kids. Ah, honey, honey.
That's so trippy. That is scary.
Oh my gosh.
That's scary. I take
that's
this
very,
idea
that's
away.
A very macabre visual we just displayed out
there. Oh my god.
I have a degree in creative writing.
There you go.
Anyway, so. What were your critiques of the film? Mm. If you want to go into some of the racist stereotypes you saw or anything like that.
Or just, you know, pacing of the film, whatever it is.
So I actually really liked the pacing of the film. Mm-hmm. I also enjoyed that Candyman didn't get a lot of screen time because I think that gave him, like, some kind of mystery. Mm-hmm. Especially since it built up to sequels and you can, like, build off the like, character that you have now. As I was watching it, like, as an adult, I was thinking, you know... Okay, so Candyman was murdered because he impregnated a white woman, but he's also known for terrorizing the black community. So I'm, like, wondering, like, why are you terrorizing this community? Blah, 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 blah.
Right. Yeah, his motivations aren't particularly clear.
Yeah.
Well, it's just something about, like, he had already, like, finished terrorizing a bunch of, like, he could only terrorize innocents.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, he was saying, like, I had to spill innocent blood.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't really go into, like, why.
Yeah.
So his motives behind that are, like, I don't understand. And kind of just thinking about how his character was, like, in the past from briefly what we know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was...
He seems more like a stand-up guy back then.
Like, more of a stand-up guy, like...
Mm-hmm.
Kind of affluent.
Yeah, his dad's rich.
Dad.
He went to a really good school. Like, basically, yeah, they were just like...
Yeah, so I think that his history could have been a little bit more explored. So him as a character, you know, when you bring him back and he's a ghost and he's just like, it plays off of, I think, these old ideas of black men being predators and predatorial, mm-hmm. specifically over white women.
Mm-hmm.
And considering that he was murdered for, like, being with a white woman,
mm-hmm.
I think it kind of plays off of those stereotypes of, like, they're the predators or they're the angry black men.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of, like, obsession that Candyman has over, like, blonde white women with blue eyes throughout the franchise.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
so,
isn't Helen supposed to be a reincarnation of the woman
he
was in love with?
He, like, viewed her as a reincarnation. I don't think she actually was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I know in the second one, the character Annie
mm-hmm.
Actually is a descendant of his, like, past lover.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's, like, the obsession with... with her, at least, and then I don't remember the third one as much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, like, for me, I just needed, like, ways to humanize him.
Mm.
And I think it just played upon a lot of, you know, the anxiety that white folks have about poor communities. And you see this also from...
Holy shit.
True.
Yeah,
that's
and you see this also from, like, from Bernadette, when she's like, oh, we can't go into that area, or, like, we can't walk in
mm-hmm.
this area because of, like, this. And Candyman is in, like, he's in a poor... predominantly black neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you have, like, the kids and the entire community, like, terrified of this entity. And I think that they're, like, playing on that. And I think specifically Helen's character also is, you know, using the trauma of the black community for her own personal gain to finish, like, her dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
So, or, like, her thesis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of, like, those stereotypes.
Would you attribute that latter part to the stereotype aspect of it? Or would you say... in character, like, her more, like, narrow, like, tunnel vision to get the job done?
I think a little bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was definitely a white person being a white person.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Which is why I'd say, like, it's a little bit of both.
Because mm-hmm.
I think having, like, that privilege is what gives you the tunnel vision.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be affected by this, so I'm going to go over there and figure this shit out.
Exactly.
When she's been warned, like...
I know.
Even
yeah.
Bernadette people... was just like, we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was just like, yeah, I don't know.
Also, the fact that Bernadette let Bernie died, I was like, how dare you kill Bernie?
I know, I was just like, well, this is upsetting.
Yeah, she was a fucking angel.
Couldn't she have, like, just got maimed, like, her fucking husband? And, like, him go? But then I guess, you know, you kind of have to show...
it was important for the plot, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
Also,
yeah.
I did, because I just thought of this, and I was also thinking about the way that, like, some horror films can treat black bodies, is Bernie's, like, body, when you find it, is so fucking grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to
to everyone else. And, you know, she's a lighter-skinned black person, or, like,
mm-hmm.
brown person, but she's still a brown person, and you see her body, and, like, her face is... like a greenish gray, and you see, like, all of the
gore, like,
from, like, she was gutted like a fucking fish.
And, like, petrified.
And petrified, exactly.
Yeah.
So, even, like, treating black people as a spectacle in, like, this film,
mm-hmm.
I think I had issues with that.
Interesting, because I don't know if that's, it definitely seems like it could be an issue like that, but, I mean, the setting also, it's like, that's the people that they're going to be victims, like,
mm-hmm.
no matter what, like, that's just how it is. I mean, I also don't know, like, that's the one thing that questioned me too. Why is Candyman exclusive to this area? Like, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I want to assume it's because when he was killed, they spread his ashes across Cabrini Green,
mm-hmm.
and that's why he's so centralized
there. That's why he
terrorizes
it.
But, like, still even thinking about, like, why is this black person terrorizing other black people when black people aren't the one that murdered him?
Like, does he have, like, a... Well, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. But that also kind of goes back to the Tales from the Hood thing, too.
True.
Where you, like, create... Like, in this era,
mm-hmm.
it's like, you need your monsters to be monsters. It's not necessarily, like, there's gotta be, like, a whole reason behind it. It's just like, no, we just gotta make something menacing. It's Hollywood being fucking Hollywood.
Well,
that's all it is.
You get a tragic backstory, and
mm-hmm.
then the tragic backstory is completely disregarded when you have your monster,
yeah.
who's just vengeful.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter against who, doesn't matter what they did, they're just vengeful.
Just like in Rogue Cop Revelation. And
yeah.
you see the backstory happen, but
mm-hmm.
it's still just like, but we created the only reason this person can come back and seek vengeance is through being a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that episode when I was kind of trying to come up with some discussion questions, and thinking back to Tales from the Hood, and I was thinking, you know, well, is Candyman, like, similar to...
his name. I actually forget his name, yeah.
Not Clarence, but the like, zombie character.
Morehouse. Zombie Morehouse.
So I was thinking if, like, Candyman is similar to Zombie Morehouse, and if this is more of a, like, revenge fantasy than it is, like, anything. Mm-hmm. But if it is a revenge fantasy, like, how is he getting revenge on, like, people he should be getting revenge on?
Yeah, that's true, because he's, like, I don't know. That's a really weird thing. It almost seems lazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, well, like, they want to put more story into or have to explain it too much.
I feel like when it comes to outside of the skeleton of the plot, there wasn't a whole lot of deep thinking or continuity tracking.
Yeah,
that's probably why the NAACP was just like, dude, it's a movie.
Whatever. It's a fun movie.
It is. Because Candyman is, he's pretty, like, two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, he's not a very, like,
weirdly romantic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I also...
But, like, in an obsessive kind
of
way.
No, totally. No, I totally get that. But I'm saying, like, the whole part of the movie... Like, there's just a whole part of the movie where he's, like, obsessed with Helen. But he's, like, oddly, like, all up in her grill about it.
Mm-hmm. And that also goes back into what I was saying about the way that, like, black men are treated or seen when they are, like, interacting with white women as, like, predatorial and very, like... manipulative and stalkerish.
Mm-hmm. And like, you will be mine and you will be one,
like,
and
you're
blah,
gonna
blah,
be
blah.
Like my person and blah 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 blah. So like, those are just like things now as I watched it as an adult that I'm picking up on. Also, fun facts, I decided I want to apply to a PhD program. Mm-hmm. And what I want to focus my writing on is specifically like how black people are viewed in horror movies through like historical context.
There you go.
So I might look like more into this than just in general.
Go for it.
Yeah, fucking knock that bitch out.
So, Anthony, eight out of 10 bees.
Yes.
Wow.
Do you want to change your rating?
No. I really like this film. But it's also one of those things, I like the film as a film. Like, in terms of its telling its story and being, you know, just presenting a menacing villain, but then also being like, I mean, yeah, I guess there are reasons why he's obsessed with her because she resembles his ex-lover, and then he's relegated to this area because his ashes were spread over there. Mm-hmm. So the lore kind of, it makes sense to me in that sense, in terms of, you know, what it actually looks like when presented in with a different lens nowadays. Obviously, huge fucking change. But in terms of, like, telling a straightforward story, I'm kind of with the NAACP on there. It's just, like, I can see it as, like, he's the villain. He's, oh, he doesn't seem villainous.
He's not as villainous as other black villains have been. He's not as villainous as like Blackula even. Yeah.
He's more obsessed.
He's like his own thing. Because I wouldn't even say he's like an anti-hero because he's not. But he's not a villain. Mm-mm. But he's also not like, he's like the victim, but not the victim.
He has an agenda.
Yeah.
He has a very concrete agenda.
The victim with the agenda.
With a menacing tool set to get the agenda done.
He is.
Like, that's what it feels like.
Chaotic evil.
There you go. Hey. And he has the tools to, like, kind of, I don't know.
Well, no, because chaotic evil would make him a true villain.
What kind of evil would he be then?
I would say...
I forget the whole, like, range.
The whole chart. I would say he is chaotic neutral.
Interesting.
I could see
that. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense actually a lot. Because, yeah, he seems very...
He's, like, impartial. He will kill anyone regardless.
Mm-hmm. If there were other white people in the vicinity, I'm sure he would have taken them out in a fucking heartbeat if they
did
the same bullshit.
He did kill the other white people he did interact with, like
the
psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm. Who deserved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, like, he's, like, totally fucking with Helen the entire time.
Yes, he is.
Like, he is.
I'll have fun with this white bitch.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm gonna make everyone think you're fucking crazy.
You know what? I think that's a good way of putting it. He's obsessed and impartial.
He's like,
which is really odd, but he just happens to be relegated in this setting because of, and he was put there because the people were racist against him. Like, this is where you belong. Your ashes are going to be over here.
Yeah.
So he's not really his fault. He's victimizing those areas. Mm-hmm. That's where he's been put because of racism, and he needs the innocent blood to keep going.
Yeah.
That's what he needs. So his victims are the only people that are going to be in that area who are also pushed in this fucking area through racist means.
Yeah.
White supremacy.
Yep. So it all comes around, but it's just like, it's like being forced in these black on black situation because the system puts you in two different fronts for he's basically the gun store on every fucking corner grocery store. That's what he is.
Totally. No, the for me, I think the reason why I gave it 6.5 Bs out of 10.
Oh, wait, one more.
Oh yeah.
Because it's 8, because of the fucking ending.
Oh.
I loved how it wrapped it up.
Yep.
That brought that shit up to me right away. Because I love a movie that, like, has that good pace and then caps off on an exclamation point and credits.
Mm-hmm. On a high note, yeah.
Candyman did it. It's called a high. Well, he did get revenge.
Well, she got revenge, and she got, it ends on a last kill that is effective. Mm-hmm. It wraps up the plot line, and it also makes sure that the person who everyone hated the entire film gets their comeuppance.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as in terms of her comeuppance, right? But in terms of a film, I think it's actually really, really well done. The effects hold up.
Yeah.
For the most part, they hold up pretty well. Even the characters, they're all pretty, you know, they're characters. Like, the girl who wants just her baby Anthony, you know? You fucking, when she's, like, looking for her kid and is, like, crying and obsessing, I'm like, yeah, she's playing a mother who just lost her fucking kid and is surrounded by blood. She's doing it well. And it's very real, which I like. And then
lots of Anthonys in this episode.
I needed them to not kill the dog.
Yeah, fuck.
So I had a thought, and it's about Helen. And her being framed by Candyman to be the psycho. And I'm thinking in my head how easy it would be for her to, like, plead insanity or PTSD because of her being hit in the head by the, like, Candyman of Cabrini-Green like, with a hook in the head. And then just saying, like, I don't know what's happening because I have brain damage from being hit in the head and blah, 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 blah.
You know, that actually was going to a different point, though. I was thinking when I was watching the film, before we get to your ranking. Sorry, Alex. She was being treated by the cops very differently than I think she normally would have because of where she was found and what she was doing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, she was not... Suddenly her privilege was gone.
Yeah.
Because it was not only because of the severity of the crime. It's like, you shouldn't be here. You're here. What are you doing here? Now we're going to treat you like we treat everybody else that gets arrested here.
And there's such a physical difference in the, like, detective space from when she first helps them catch, like, the Candyman.
Mm-hmm.
When he's just like, oh, we don't need him. Like, we have you. And then he smiles and he's just like, we've got this white woman who was just, like, not from this neighborhood who caught this guy. And now she was caught in that neighborhood covered in blood. And he's just like, fuck, you screwed it up for us.
Yep.
Well, there's that, and then there's also how he, I don't even know, like, just, like, the change in his personality, like, set it up so that we all kind of, we get to see what it's like for everyone else or whatever, and it's just, like, I don't know.
Not taking any shit.
Yeah.
Not taking any excuse. It's like...
Well, it also, like... You know, in the beginning or at the first interaction, she's a victim. In the second one, she's a suspect. But then you're also, like, operating under the assumption, like, quote unquote, in a perfect world, everyone's assumed innocent until proven guilty. But that's not, like, even how you treat people. It's a completely different way to treat someone. You know, you're going to treat a victim much different than you're going to treat a perpetrator, regardless of guilt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know why Anne Marie left her child alone.
Question. Yes.
Good question.
We're all speculating.
Yeah, yes. I don't know.
But explain 6.5 Bs.
Because I am a picky bitch by nature. And
that's accurate.
I liked it. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have, like, it didn't, but it also didn't particularly wow me.
Mm-hmm.
It was an enjoyable film. I'd probably watch it again, and that's probably as good as it's gonna get for me.
Yes.
I enjoyed the lore of the film, and I did enjoy most of the film. I just I didn't think it aged very well, and I think that the there were some stereotypes and sort of how the characters were being treated in the film that I just was just like, whatever. But it also dragged a little bit too, like, the pacing wasn't right for me, I don't think.
Really?
It was an hour and a half movie, and it felt like it should have been 2 hours.
No, to me it felt like an hour and a half movie.
It felt like a 2 hour movie to me. I was just like, can we wrap it up, please?
Interesting.
I watched it again today and thought it was going, like, too fast.
Yeah, I thought it was going too fast, too.
Oh, no.
I thought he was more.
It dragged. Yeah. It dragged for me.
Honestly, like, to flesh out their stereotypes and get, like, more depth to each of these characters that they just kind of make caricatures.
Yeah.
Add 20 minutes. Add 20 fucking minutes. I think it would have been okay.
No. Nope. Not for me. So, in what ways could this film have further humanized Candyman rather than perpetuate the angry black man stereotype that we see in the film?
Make him less obsessive.
Yeah. Or, like, make the main character not a white woman.
I mean, yeah, you could... Like, I feel like you're also going out of your way to do that. So it's like, just let the character be the character. It doesn't matter what race they are, whatever.
Right.
Just let the character be the character. But yeah. But make them less, like, fucking salivating at the sight of her kind of
thing.
I think that... It diminishes his whole backstory.
Stop making him a predator.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what bothered me.
Yeah, because he was killed with the, like, intention that, like, they think he's a predator because mm-hmm. he's a black man with a white woman, and then he becomes this evil entity that's still, like, an actual predator.
Yeah, then becomes, like, a hyper-predator.
Yeah.
And he would not be that way with his, you know, the woman he impregnated his wife before. Like, have him treat the character more like he would be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, fucking just wanting to fucking touch up on her and shit.
Well, it would have been so much... it would have been so much cooler if Candyman was, like, more, like, purposely and authentically revenge-oriented
mm-hmm.
towards white racist men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think... Or, like, towards the people that actually got him murdered.
That made him Candyman.
Yeah, that made him Candyman instead of just being like, I'm going to terrorize this community that I, you know...
Well, then that brings the question is, because of he was turned to Candyman, is he, by default, does he just have to terrorize?
Yeah.
Like, is he always going to... Is being able, terrorizing people the way he continues his legend forward? Because, like we were saying before, he's stuck in that area. Like, his ashes are there. Like, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
So, if they dropped his ashes in a suburb, he would fuck up the suburbs tremendously.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Because it's more like he's, like...
He's a local legend.
Yeah, he's a local legend, but, like, a lot of it is based off of his, like, spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, like, I don't think there's a whole lot of, like, actual, like, not I don't want to say intelligence to imply that he's, like, dumb, but, like... awareness, like mm-hmm. he's a vengeful spirit. He's not a conscious ghost.
He's more like a force.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
like he is when spirits linger too long, and all they become is rage.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Hey,
when
this
all
is why they get rid of them in Supernatural,
right? So like when when you stay too long, you become full of rage. Or in his case, he died such a violent death that
mm-hmm.
his spirit only knew rage. So mm-hmm. he did not discriminate against who he wanted to terrorize.
Yeah, kind mm-hmm. of put that energy back into the outer world,
mm-hmm.
or the real world, basically. What do you think, though, DJ? What could have changed here to make him seem less like? Again, this fucking stereotype that, like, actually, yeah, it's part of the film.
Yeah. I would have liked to see, like, him not kidnap this child.
Yes.
For one thing.
Okay, thank you.
But he didn't kill the kid.
But he almost did.
Mm-hmm.
He
used the kid as leverage.
he used the kid as leverage and also was intending to, like, let this child die for him getting Helen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
damn.
I think that would have, like, considering that he died also, like, being someone who would have been a father, like, I think that, like, showing that he has some kind of, like, humanistic, like, compassion.
Any human any part
kind
of him.
Compassion, yeah.
As he died, yeah, he did die somebody who was going to be a father.
Yeah.
And he should
and
not.
Also, the woman who he impregnated was, like, there witnessing his death when he did die. So, I'm, like, imagining that. Like, of course that rage is there because he died a violent
mm-hmm.
death, but I also wonder, like, where other emotions, like,
mm-hmm.
other intense emotions would have been for him.
Oh, interesting. Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the baby aspect of it. Like, that actually, man, there's a lot to pull from this fucking movie.
Okay, so kind of moving on after that, would you say that this movie plays on racism as well as classism, with Rose's intentional choice to film in Cabrini-Green and also having a black co-star, Bernie, who is a grad student and sort of afraid to go into Cabrini-Green? Do you feel like this film plays on fears of race as well as poverty?
classism is definitely a big part of this film, even from like her finding out that her condo was a former project and her being asked like, well, how much did you actually pay for this?
And she's like, you don't want to know.
Yeah, like fucking thing. But like how interchangeable that is, that a paint job and a couple of things plastered up. Change.
Gentrification.
Yeah. Suddenly, oh, it's a condo.
Yeah.
This is supposed to house, you know, people who were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now, because it has a great view, it just, you know, you tripled in price.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So class is a very, very big part of
lots
this
of intersections, I feel.
There's a fear. There's an inherent fear when they're going into Cabrini Green where they're just like, literally, I feel like this is another issue that I had with the film, is that their fear was, and I don't know how genuine it is to the time, to the 90s, but it just seemed so, like, almost comical and, like, overdone, their fear of Cabrini Green. Like, mm-hmm. they were just, like, genuinely, like, I don't know. It's, like, it reminded me of, like grandmas who are terrified to let you go anywhere ever because there's bad people everywhere. Like, they were mm-hmm. just, like, they were paranoid. Like, the second they got out of their car, like, they were going to be surrounded and, like, you know, like, attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't know if this is something to do with, like, just the situation in the 90s itself, and but, like, media itself at the time. I mean, you got, like, Menace to Society was released at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Colors, which, if you want to talk about, like, stereotypes and shit, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Colors is a motherfucker.
Boys in the Hood. I think a lot of films in the 90s, like, centering black people, like, had a very similar,
mm-hmm.
like, way that they treated, like, people in poverty and people of color.
Although, stuff like Boys in the Hood and everything was more sensitive and gave actual real characters.
Of course,
Yeah. Where this one was like, well, we're still a horror movie, so we can't, like, take time to, like, flesh out everybody, so we'll just use the stereotypes.
Well, yeah, and there's that, and then also something that was interesting is Bernadette and Candyman had similar upbringings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bernadette, like, grew up in, like, a higher social class or,
mm-hmm.
like, or socioeconomic class than, you know, the everyone else in Cabrini Green.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought she was a really good, like, juxtaposition with Candyman because
mm-hmm.
she also was raised in a higher economic class and had the same fears as white people going into the hood,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really interesting because I was just like, you must have grown up in a completely different type of, like,
mm-hmm.
culture.
She was very, like, complex,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Oh, she was. Yeah.
Because she was very, like, you know, growing up in a, like,
an affluent
area, and also being at that same time the person who was like, we shouldn't be doing this,
mm-hmm.
or like, this is a bad idea.
And still getting
and
murdered.
Still getting murdered. She deserved so much better. She deserved so much better.
Yeah, no, she did. And it's interesting, too, because when she was there with Virginia Madsen's character, Helen, the other characters looked past her. They went straight to Helen.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you're fine. Like,
well,
kind of
yeah.
right away.
And that's where you get a really cool intersection of Helen, about Helen and Bernadette being referred to as women, but then Helen still being referred to primarily because she's the only white woman.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you're seeing that intersection of race and class, specifically surrounding black women, when they're at dinner with that guy who's a total dickwad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. fuck him.
Who is just like, I wrote the paper on it, blah, 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 blah,
oh.
blah, blah, I get
oh.
it.
I think he's in one of the other ones, and I think he dies in one of those.
Good.
I'll watch that fucking movie that he dies in, because I fucking hate that guy.
But yeah, he was super pretentious and
mm-hmm.
like, the whole thing, and
yeah,
it was...
Yeah, my fucking
jacket
think
that I wrote...
My jacket has elbow.
Patches, yeah.
I work in a research center, and we don't use articles written 10 years ago because they're outdated.
Oh.
Bitcha.
So suck on those 72 penises.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, so I think that was kind of interesting. I really liked, I wish there had been more exploration into the classism of it,
mm-hmm.
Because, like, I really liked Anne-Marie, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Anne-Marie's character in, like, she was just like, my son isn't going to be raised like this, or my
mm-hmm.
son isn't going to get into, like, that life.
It's like, Candyman's not going to get him.
Yeah, and it was just very interesting. So I feel like I want to rewatch it again.
Would Candyman be an allegory for that violence then? If it's like, my son's not going to be a victim of that.
See,
I wonder that, or I wonder if they are like talking about the like actual real person using the name Candyman, who was like
that
gang
guy.
Oh yeah, that too, huh? I forgot about that though.
Because she asked
the
when like
Candyman.
Yeah, so like when Helen and Bernie like came in there, and she's like, "Are you looking for like the sweets?"
Mm-hmm.
So I assume she was talking about like,
yeah,
Candyman, the like drug leader.
Yes.
So that's what I thought she mentioned.
Serving the nose candy. Yes.
Yeah. So I was here thinking like, oh, is she talking about like Candyman, the drug lord, and saying my son's not going to like get taken by the Candyman, like fall into that life.
Maybe. See.
So there's a lot of different interpretations you can take with it.
All right. I'll bump it up to a 7 Bs.
They really could have like emphasized having this discussion. I'm like, yeah, they could. You could have taken Virginia Madsen out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See,
actually had a more layered film.
Right. That's
there.
The thing is, there's like so many different directions that I feel like this film wanted to go in, and it just didn't decide until the very, very end.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, okay, this is the direction we're gonna go.
Yeah, and I think it's such a simple film too.
Mm-hmm.
That like, but it takes place in an area that has a lot of complex issues.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Because of that, it can't address anything because the story itself is so straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And it relies on these caricatures almost to like fill the time and fill the roles and everything that needs to happen. But it's problematic looking back at it now because obviously we have much more context and people aren't as, Newt Gingrich being on the fucking TV and being like, meh.
Just like that.
Just like that. Just meh.
So.
Go Texas. but also, while as the last question here in this wonderful month of
the last episode
of
Black History Month
for
2019,
celebrating Black people every day of your lives because
exactly.
We're wonderful.
Not relegated to one month. Oh, month's over. March, we're the Irish.
Actually, March is Asian American History Month.
Interesting.
Hey.
I wanted, Caitlin wanted us to do Asian horror, and for
reasons
that we will explain at the in a couple minutes, we are not doing that.
If I had known the information before, I'd throw it in there. What is, classic question for the Horrible People's Podcast here, the kill of the fucking film for each of you?
Trevor.
Which one was Trevor?
The husband.
The shitty husband.
Oh yeah, fuck him. Trevor, absolutely, yes.
Trevor.
Trevor.
Also Trevor.
Okay, cool.
I'm glad we're all in consensus.
Because
he deserved it. He was the only one in the film who I genuinely felt deserved it.
Oh, yeah. And it builds up to it.
And
yeah.
Because he's sad and he's, like, having these flashbacks while his, like...
Undergrad,
like, little, like, play thing. And that's what pissed me off. It's like, it is so obvious he's having an affair from the very fucking beginning.
Yeah.
And Helen knew.
She knew.
And she was just, like, kind of, like, she was questioning him on it, but she wasn't, like, she was like, okay, I have other shit to deal with right now. I'm trying to finish my thesis, and I'm trying to not get murdered.
Dude, I feel like he picked up Helen when she was that same age. And then
totally.
Then she got too old, and he's like, well, I gotta find a younger fucking piece.
See, that's
that explains
the thing.
Why he so, like, looks so old.
Yeah, it's true. Like, it just pissed me off, because I thought Helen deserved better, too. Like,
yeah.
And I didn't even like Helen that much.
No,
yeah.
But she got fucking tossed around this movie.
Yeah.
Dude, she's just like a piece of fucking meat being tossed around by Trevor and Candyman.
Yeah.
And then also you have, what's her face, Stacy or whatever, with the steak, who's just like, meh, like, what? I'm like, okay.
Pay attention to me.
I was like, holy shit, you're insufferable.
Oh, yeah, no, dude, yeah, that fucking guy, good. He's, yeah, that was the kill of the film,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I was
hoping that Stacy would get pinned for Trevor's murder.
I think that's what they alluded to at the end of the film, because
she's holding the knife. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
true.
That would be nice.
And that was stupid of Helen to pick up the knife also.
That's
what I said. That's when I started yelling at the TV.
Out loud. Why would you pick it up?
Yeah,
like, if I wake up in a pool of blood and there's a knife next to me, I'm not picking up the fucking knife. I'm laying there and I'm like, I didn't do it.
Yeah. Wasn't me, sir. It wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
I'm walking out and be like, there's a knife over there.
And you will note that I did not touch it.
Yeah, look at my hands. Oh, shit, blood. No, but look.
But my fingerprints aren't on the bloody cleaver.
Yeah, it wasn't me. But any other final closing notes on Candyman other than please watch this film? I didn't say it up top, but if you have not seen it, I would recommend you watch it.
Yeah, I recommend it too, honestly. No final note, just
and if anything, do it to see the beautiful Tony Todd.
Yes.
He's a very attractive man.
It's Tony Todd is like...
He's iconic.
He's iconic, exactly. I would say, this is the youngest I've seen Tony Todd look.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
He was 39 in this movie.
Black don't cry.
Yeah.
He was 39, and this was his first, like, big break.
Mm-hmm.
So he was 39 when this, so...
So you're saying that there's a chance for me?
Oh, dude. Samuel Jackson didn't get his big break till like 40-something.
Yeah, so it's...
Bitch.
Yeah, it's just like, there is hope. But he also, like...
Well, Hollywood system just being like, not until you're 40s.
Yeah.
We need the wise black men.
Yes.
But also, it's very interesting because he talks about this a lot, his experience in acting school, about how, like, he's like, for every... you know, one of us you see who made it, there's 100 of us who gave up on it.
Mm-hmm. Or got, did a little bit and then pushed down to the side.
Like, yeah.
Like William Marshall, mm-hmm. Blackula, same fucking situation. He was hot shit. And then it was like, all right, buddy, you're old now. We're not going to have anything.
So, but yeah, so I think that is a good place.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And
watch the film. Watch it's the great. Film.
We got a special month for you, motherfuckers.
Yeah. So, do you want to talk a little bit about next month?
It's my birth month.
Yay!
Yay! I'm turning an age. But yeah,
33.
No, 32.
Close.
Yeah, a little there. They're right there. But yeah, so I picked all the movies. They're all fucking weird.
They're all weird.
They're all weird. Next week is gonna be a weird one. But we're also covering. Oh yeah, we actually went to the movie theater to watch this one.
Yeah, this is one of the films that we actually got to see in theater together because Anthony, right at the very beginning when we first started this like weird ride roller coaster of a podcast, Anthony was just like, if this movie is ever shown at this theater, we're gonna go and we're gonna cover it, and I was like, okay. And it happened in time for Anthony's birth month. For the month of March, Anthony basically has his birthday mandate. So he picked all of the movies we're watching next month. I gave him free reign. I gave him no input. I was just like, do what thou wilt.
Does that mean you get June?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Can I have May?
No.
No, we have May already planned out.
How dare you?
Sorry.
Collectively, like...
It's the end of Black History Month. You see how they're treating you?
But, so, that is...
Your hopes and dreams.
But, yeah, so in March, what you're gonna see is a very interesting hodgepodge. It's gonna be bookended with film movements.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have one big fucking franchise that I can't wait.
I'm very excited.
Well, you're excited, too. I know you are. I know you're excited about this one. And then, of course, an adaptation... animated horror. Animated horror.
Yes.
Oh, which you guys are not fucking prepared for.
I'm not prepared for it either.
Oh.
But, of course, as we wrap it up, we cannot end this episode without profusely thanking DJ for guesting.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us for Black History Month. We loved having you at the beginning and the end. And
thanks. I'll see you next year.
Yes. Well, also, actually, if you need more of DJ's input, we, as in DJ and myself, will be doing a mini episode coming out and probably right after or right before this episode comes out. So we'll see. About Horror Noir, which is the documentary that just dropped on Shudder a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to watch that. We're going to do a little mini, so just the two of us kind of talking about that. So be on the lookout for that if it hasn't been out already.
Yeah, if you need your DJ fix, you can, listen to it and get that perspective.
And if
and
that...
if you need more of me, just request it from these two.
Yes.
I enjoy doing this. I'm finishing up grad school, and this, just re-energizes me.
Don't worry. You'll be popping in. For sure.
And we also do have another guest next week to join us.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
To bring in March.
We've actually mentioned this person before. They're a very, very big fan of the film that we're covering and the director. So they know him very, very well.
And, so it's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a very, very educational
plot twist. It's me.
It is indeed Jay.
In white face.
So if you need even more of a DJ fix, where can they find you on social media, DJ?
Yeah, where? Where?
Oh, wow. Bees. So you can find me on Instagram at that awkward trans kid. That's me. What's my Twitter?
Deca underscore Spears, I believe.
So on Twitter, at Deca underscore Spears. I don't understand how to use Twitter.
Neither does Anthony.
So, and I'm like, I don't know how Twitter works. But yeah, I'm on Instagram. Follow me. See pictures of my cat and my dog and sometimes my face.
And mostly DJ's food.
Yeah. Feel free to comment on my food. I make good food.
DJ does make good food. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Lost the username that I loved.
I'm sorry. I also am not blonde anymore.
I know. I told her to make her username the Brunette Thesaurus.
Doesn't have the same ring to it. No. The Blonde Dictionary is gone but not forgotten and may or may not make a comeback at some point in the future.
Your family does get lighter blonde hair as they get older.
Yeah. I just lucked out in the genetic pool where it started out light and got dark and it's probably going to get lighter. But we'll see what happens during the summer.
You're like a chameleon.
Yeah, we'll see what happens during the summer, because my hair always gets lighter. But yeah, so that's where you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then Anthony.
I'm also, I'm at Hyrulean Hustler on both Instagram and Twitter. Some of you have me on Twitter, which is nice. Sorry for not using it.
Yeah, Anthony pops in, likes the he doesn't even retweet it. He just likes the weekly episode tweet, and then he bounces.
And then Instagram is just going to be pictures, I guess. More of my face because people seem to like those pictures more, which I don't understand. But I post food sometimes too.
I'm kidding. Anthony has a nice face.
Yay. And then Hyrulean Hustler, people seem to every once in a while ask me Zelda questions, which is pretty cool. So if you have any Zelda questions, Hyrulean Hustler.
So yeah, that's it for this week.
Our own podcast.
Fucking A. Hey, it guys. Is 11:30 at night. I am exhausted. Okay, so you can follow us on Twitter at Horror People Pod, and you can also find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast.
Yay.
And yeah, and please, 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 please like, subscribe, rate, whatever the hell on Apple Apple Podcasts. Yeah, Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Give us a 5-star rating, please. It means the world to us. It makes us so happy.
Yeah, and then write a review so we can know what we're doing right. And if we're doing something wrong, just DM us instead.
Yeah.
If you absolutely hate this podcast, then fuck you.
Yeah, hey, there you go. See?
Great input. Thank you.
That's what I say all the time.
You guys can only... You guys are interesting together. Anyway, so thank you for joining us. Please follow us on all of those things. Give us your feedback if there's something you like, something you hated. What do you want to see coming up this summer? Because
we haven't filled that one yet. Yeah.
Yeah, we have, we're in a really cool time because there's a lot of cool horror films coming out. If you want us to cover, because we got a lot of really great feedback on Get Out, if you want us to cover more recent films, you have to let us know.
Mm-hmm.
And we will do what we can.
Exactly.
But yeah, so find us on all the social media places. Everyone say thank you, DJ. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, DJ.
And we will catch you next week.
Alrighty.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
See you. Peace out, Flex.
Bye, guys.